Jackie Sue was once crazy about the guy she married.
I have certain unresolved feelings about your father. I don't trust him.
But tonight, at her 25-year high school reunion...
Well, Charlie won't be here tonight. We're getting divorced, actually.
She'll disappear in time. And arrive in her senior year of high school.
What am I doing here?
You passed out for a minute, that's all.
Oh, Mom. What is going on?
You're home now.
What do you think, Peggy Sue?
You bought an Ansel.
Now, she's got the chance to start over again.
I have a headache.
This time, she'll know better.
Should we break up? Because if we did, I don't even know about it.
What if you fall into the hands of some madman with plans to manipulate your brain?
Well, that's why I was getting a divorce. I'm a grown woman with a lifetime of experiences you can't understand.
Girls mature faster than guys.
Digital, watches, and miniature television sets.
Oh, and huge radios. I mean, for some reason, everything else gets tiny, but portable radios get enormous.
Peggy Sue and Mr. Square Root.
Let's make love.
What? You mean sex?
From Francis Coppola.
Well, at least I got to see you and Grandma again.
Kathleen Turner.
Has this ever worked before?
The last time was 600 years ago.
Peggy Sue got married.
I could be trapped here forever.
Change your destiny. Marry me.
Will you marry me?
I don't want to marry anyone, Richard.
Why not? Polygamy is legal in Utah.
Nicholas Cage.
I'm proposing to you now.
I think you're crazy, but I'm not crazy enough to marry you twice.
Peggy Sue got married.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I'm excited to get into yet another Nicolas Cage movie.
Yet another Nicolas Cage, Francis Ford Coppola movie.
That's right.
Yeah. Today, Mike and I will be discussing 1986's Peggy Sue Got Married, featuring Cage as the sort of romantic interest. Opposite Kathleen Turner's Peggy Sue, and directed once again by Cage's uncle, Francis Ford Coppola. An IMDb plot synopsis reads, Peggy Sue faints at a high school reunion. When she wakes up, she finds herself in her own past just before she finished school. I mean, that is the barest bones.
Like, in our continuing saga of poor IMDb plot synopsis.
Yeah. Like, it's technically right, but it doesn't... yeah. Like, I feel like that could mean so many things. When she wakes up, she finds herself in her own past.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, that doesn't necessarily imply time travel, but this movie has time travel.
Right, yeah, apparently.
Yeah, and part of what's been fun about this podcast has been that, in addition to going through the films of Nicolas Cage, which has been a blast, we've also gotten to explore a period of Francis Ford Coppola's career, where he was struggling to have another commercial hit. Now, that didn't really seem to be on his mind when he made Rumblefish.
No, that was purely an exercise in filmmaking, I think.
Exactly, yeah. But The Cotton Club was meant to be a kind of big movie, and it was a box office disappointment. Mm-hmm. And with the exception of maybe The Outsiders, Peggy Sue Got Married is the first major box office hit for Coppola since Apocalypse Now, which was 7 years earlier, and like five movies later.
Yeah.
He had a rough several years in the 80s, and he was heavily in debt, as we discussed when we were making The Cotton Club.
Yep.
Or when we were reviewing The Cotton Club. We didn't make it.
I didn't even realize that you said that.
Peggy Sue Got Married is also a much more decidedly commercial film.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Than Apocalypse Now or Rumblefish. If Rumblefish was Coppola's rejection of the studio system, I think Peggy Sue Got Married is Coppola just back to working very comfortably within it.
Oh yeah, yeah. It definitely has that feel where he was just like, he maybe a little defeated, I don't know. He was just like, okay, I'll do what you want.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, you know, I liked it.
I think you enjoyed it too. But I did feel like it was kind of Coppola sort of on autopilot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, there's nothing that shines through that you're like, this is a Francis Ford Coppola movie. It's just like, this is a movie about teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. But the movie made $41 million on a budget of $18 million. And it was a big critical success. It appeared on both Siskel and Ebert's top 10 list for 1986. And it was nominated for 3 Academy Awards.
What? Really?
Yeah. What? Best Actress for Kathleen Turner.
Okay.
Best Cinematography and Best Costume Design.
Sure, why not?
So there you go. I mean, do you think those are like praiseworthy, award-worthy aspects of the movie, Mike?
Not that I noticed. No. They weren't bad, but I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I do think Kathleen Turner gives a very good performance.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I was thinking more of the like costumes and cinematography.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. They were good. Like they were period appropriate costume. Right. Costume design had a lot of period appropriate stuff to do, and the cinematography was fine. It didn't blow me away as much as like other Francis Ford Coppola movies have. Like, for example, Rumblefish.
Yeah.
But
also you didn't say they were Academy Award winners, so there's that.
Ouch.
Burn.
The film stars Nicolas Cage as Charlie Bodell. It stars Kathleen Turner as Peggy Sue Bodell. It also stars Barry Miller, Catherine Hicks, Joan Allen, Kevin J. O'Connor, Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Exclamation point. Lisa Jane Persky, Lucinda Jenny, Sophia Coppola. Maureen O'Sullivan, Leon Ames, Helen Hunt, and Glenn Withrow. The film was directed by Francis Ford Coppola 2 years after The Cotton Club and 1 year before Gardens of Stone, which would be another box office disaster, and was written by Jerry Leichtling and Arlene Sarler. Now, that cast has a very big cast, this movie, and a lot of, like, people who would go on to be pretty big in very smaller, like, supporting roles in this movie.
Yeah.
They're very much in, like, the roles that like Nicolas Cage was in the beginning of this podcast.
There you go. Way to tie it all together, Mike.
But Jim Carrey was the one that I was most excited to see because I thought that was like,
yeah, that was funny. Pretty cool.
And I thought the role he has in this movie works pretty well with his persona.
Yeah,
like he comes off as kind of like the class clown a little bit.
Absolutely,
he's Cage's best friend in the movie.
Yeah, he's very doofy, and it fits in with what his whole shtick is.
Yeah, there's one point in the
or
movie
would come to be.
There's one point in the movie where he's talking with Cage and Carrey just makes like this really weird face. do you know what scene I'm talking about?
It's like a scene
where they're at like the lunch table.
And he like dry heaves?
Yeah, he does the dry heave, and it's like that's the most Jim Carrey thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Like it felt like I don't know, like he was auditioning for Ace Ventura like 10 years early. Like
basically. The actor that shocked me the most, I guess, was I think it's Kevin J. O'Connor.
Is the
like beatnik kid, right?
Yes.
In this, yeah, because I only know him as the squirrely dude from Brendan Fraser's The Mummy.
Truthfully, I actually had no idea who Kevin J. O'Connor was.
I only recognized his voice, and I was like, wait a second. I looked up at IMDb and was like, oh my god, that's him.
That's funny.
I've never seen him in anything. I guess he's in The Master, too.
Yeah, I think this was his first movie.
Oh, well, there you go.
Wait, he was in The Master?
Yeah, he's one of like the people that help... what's his name? I can't think of it. No.
Philip Seymour Hoffman? Dead.
Yes, Philip Seymour Hoffman in his... like cult thing. He's like one of the guys that helps him write the book or something weird. I don't remember exactly, but he's in it for like 5 minutes.
Oh, the more you know. I mean, I assume this is the first movie because it says when the opening credits are going and introducing Kevin J. O'Connor,
probably,
which is usually what you do when it's somebody's first movie.
Right.
Also, Helen Hunt's in this movie as the daughter of Peggy Sue, who only appears in the opening scene and the very end. I do think it's weird. Peggy Sue repeatedly mentions that she has two kids, a daughter and a son.
Yeah.
You never see the son.
Son's gone.
Not even in the ending of the movie where Peggy Sue wakes up the present day and is in the hospital.
Yep.
And Nicolas Cage is there, and Helen Hunt is there. Her son is not there, and I don't know why that is. I think it's really like odd.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't know if we're supposed to infer that he's dead, but like
no, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, because she mentions in like presently she has two kids. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty weird.
Yeah. And also, Maureen O'Sullivan and Leon Ames play Peggy Sue's grandparents, who are two pretty big Hollywood stars, like, towards the end of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
Maureen O'Sullivan was Jane in the Tarzan movies of the 40s and 50s, and Leon Ames was a pretty huge actor in the 40s and 50s as well. He was actually one of the stars of The Postman Only Rings Twice, which is an amazing film noir if you haven't seen that. That's a really great movie.
I think I've seen the... J. Jack Nicholson one, right?
Okay, yeah, there was a remake in the 80s.
Yeah.
But the one from the 1946, that one is terrific. I've never seen the remake.
I'll have to check it out.
So we have two differing versions. We have two different visions of what Postman Always Rings Twice looks like in our own heads.
Analysis. like you said, this has a huge cast of people that are soon to be famous and are still famous. I don't know. It's pretty cool. I did like the ensemble, if you will. Everyone has a great chemistry on screen.
Yes. Yeah. I think it all worked pretty well. I think it captured the feel of high school and teenagers very well. I did also want to mention Sofia Coppola as Peggy Sue's sister. Just a little odd.
Yeah,
she was fine in the role, but it's always weird when I like seeing Sofia Coppola in a Francis Ford Coppola movie. I don't know why, it just feels like odd to me. Probably because she ruined The Godfather 3, but that's
it's a little personal for you. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that Nick Cage used the name Cage to avoid nepotism, and we've mentioned it every time that he is in three of his uncle's movies.
Yep.
And then also Sofia Coppola is in this one. maybe it was a good idea that he changed his name.
Maybe. I mean, Sofia Coppola ended up having a great career.
Yeah, that's true.
As a director. But just, she doesn't really act anymore, as far as I know. She only really acted in her dad's movies, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
Because she was also, she had, like, bit roles in Rumblefish and Cotton Club. Like, very small roles.
Right.
But this was like the first major one that I can think of, like where mm-hmm. I actually like noticed her.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So I think let's get to talking more about certain aspects of the movie. Is there anything specific about the movie that you want to talk about, Mike?
Not as particular scenes or anything, but I thought it was actually really funny. Like, the way Peggy Sue's character handles being back in time or whatever is going on, where she just assumes she's dead, so she does, like, whatever she wants. In the first part, at least, when she first wakes up back in time.
Yes.
And she's, like, getting drunk. She's like, well, I'm dead anyway. And she pours, like, a full glass of whiskey and chugs it.
Yes, yeah.
I thought that kind of stuff was pretty funny.
That was pretty good. And there was a lot of good lines there. I liked when her dad came home and found out she was drunk. She was like, whatever, I'm going to go to Liverpool and discover the Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. It played with that, going back to an older time period thing. Like we were talking before we started, like Back to the Future.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of thing.
The easiest comparison point for this movie is Back to the Future, which was released a year earlier.
Yeah,
and deals with very similar. It's a very similar movie because it's somebody from the 80s going back in time to mm-hmm. a high school. Although the difference in this one is that the person going back in time was actually a teenager in 1960.
Right.
And it's just like, has basically just taken over her life as a teenager in the 60s.
Yeah, gone back into her time as herself, not like to a different time period.
She isn't time traveling, and there's not two of her there. She has like taken over her own body in a weird way. And the way that, it's never explained why she time travels, and that's fine, I think. They do kind of refer to it as, like, hundreds of people. Like, a lot of people time travel all the time. Yeah. Or, like, Richard's theory that time is like a burrito.
Right, and you can just put whatever you want in it.
Yeah, first of all, I thought it was amazing that Richard just turns out to be a time travel expert. Like,
yeah, I did really like that character. That, like, he's just, like, this nerdy science dude, writing a book on kites. And Peggy Sue is like, hey, do you know anything about time travel? And he's like, well, he knows everything about it. And he's totally cool with it.
Yeah, I think he hits the short end of the stick in this movie, although he does end up being very successful in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, the way, I don't know, Peggy Sue's relationship with Nicolas Cage in this movie
mm-hmm.
Is very, like, I don't really know what the word is, but I don't like it. It's very weird, and I feel like there was a better way for the movie to keep going, because I feel like at the end of the movie, like, I felt like she should have been with Richard.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's a good point.
It's basically how I felt at the end of it.
Yeah, I can't remember if they I feel like they sort of explain, like, maybe she didn't time travel, but she, I think she actually did.
I think she...
They say, like, oh, your heart stopped for a while when she passed out. They had to give you CPR.
Right.
I think that you hear, like, as she's coming back, like, the Wayne's World, like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and that, like, that sound effect literally happens.
Yeah. I think they do kind of leave it ambiguous as to whether she actually time traveled or not.
Yeah, but then she gets the book from the Beatnik kid.
She gets the book from the Beatnik kid.
Which would mean she did time travel.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know.
I don't know.
But it doesn't, it's not like, it doesn't take away from the movie the fact that that's unclear. It just makes it a little confusing as to, like, what their relationship would be like now.
Yeah, I do think the movie goes for an ultra-happy ending, like in Wayne's World, when, when I think it could have gone in a different and more interesting direction.
Yeah.
So, because it's, you know, it spends so much of the movie explaining to you why Peggy Sue and Charlie don't work.
Yep.
And then at the end of the movie, they just get back together.
Yeah, like the locket was the key to it all, apparently.
Yeah, and I don't know, that doesn't really work for me.
Nope. It reminds me of the end of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, when it's like, sure, no one's dead, bring everyone back, and like, Abraham...
and Abraham Lincoln shows up.
Yeah. Everyone walks back into the hospital room at the end of this film as well.
Yes, but in any case, I did think I like the music in this movie quite a bit. I think there's some fun musical cues. I mean, they open the movie with Buddy Holly's song "Peggy Sue Got Married."
Yep.
Which, like, obviously, you would do that if you have a movie called "Peggy Sue Got Married."
Yeah.
But you know, you have like a pretty funny song, like "Why Must I Be a Teenager in Love" is playing at one point,
right.
Which you know, that's funny. That's
It, we've talked about it before, too, with the other Francis Ford Coppola movies, that he seems to always... Music plays a huge role in all of his films. And he always... especially, I mean, particularly Rumblefish.
Right, Rumblefish with the Stuart Copeland score.
Yeah. This one also, the music... the score and the soundtrack add a huge bonus, or a big plus to this movie.
Yeah, it's good for laughs. It's good for setting the tone. I like to... Yeah. They play the song Tequila at some point.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, I think one of the things I thought was pretty funny about the movie is that nobody seems to have any kind of reaction to the weird stuff that Kathleen Turner says.
Like, yeah. It's casual.
Yeah. Like she'll, you know, say something like out of time. Like she'll just be like, oh yeah, I've already lived through this or whatever. And like, right. Nobody has a reaction to it. And yeah. Like at some point, I just wanted somebody to be like Woody Harrelson in True Detective, where he just goes, "I just want you to stop saying odd shit."
Yeah, like there's the scene when they're having breakfast and her mom's like, "Oh, did you and Charlie have a fight?" And she's like, "Yeah." She's like, "Oh, about what? House payments?" And she leaves that. Like, no, I don't react at all.
Yeah. Yep. But I did like you know, Peggy Sue's relationship to her parents and how she had to like kind of get back into living, like the space of living with at home and living with her family again, and living with and going to school again and having all that. Like she, her face off against her algebra teacher was pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, there were some, moments, I don't know about the parents specifically, but where I think we're supposed to infer that they're dead. Like, I mean, I guess her parents might be, but her sister definitely seems like is dead.
No, when she's an adult. I think her family's still alive.
Because she seems like crazy excited to see her sister. It's like, don't eat that because it gives you red lips. Like, I don't know. It seemed really weird.
That was that was a reference to, so Eminem's,
I didn't pick up what she was actually eating.
Right. So red Eminem's ended up having like some kind of carcinogen in them.
Oh, okay.
In the 60s or whatever, and they were discontinued in 1976 because of that.
There you go.
So I think she was trying to warn her sister not to eat red M&Ms. They did bring back red M&Ms without the carcinogen at some point.
Well, good on M&Ms.
I got the implication her family was still alive. I just didn't think she had a great relationship with her sister, maybe.
That's like, true. Yeah, that's possible.
But the implication is definitely that her grandparents are dead.
Yeah. And we all know why, because they travel to a different time.
Yeah, she tells her grandparents about the time traveling, and they are totally cool with it.
Yeah, they're like totally understand. They're like, yeah, we get it.
Not only that, the grandfather turns out to be some kind of time lord.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
This is where the movie lost me, I think.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the movie, kind of goes off the rails with the Time Lord thing, and then Nicolas Cage kidnaps her and, like, gives her the locket, and they, like, bone, I guess, and then she wakes up in the present.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty weird. Peggy Sue does have that moment, sort of, where kind of destiny is unavoidable or it can't be changed or some weird way. She has that realization at the end, and she kind of accepts what her fate is, and then she comes back to the present and is, like, better for it in some weird Hollywood movie kind of way.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just reminded me of, like, Final Destination. It's like, no matter what, can't avoid it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, she goes back in time, and she has these opportunities to, you know, change her life. Like, theoretically, if this isn't, like, a dream or something, she has the opportunity to change her life, like, forever, like, change everything about what happened. And instead, she finds herself going through the same steps that she did when she was a teenager. Like, she said, she ends up falling for Charlie again. And I think that's really interesting. Like, that's, like, the only... Like, that was sort of, like, that does reinforce the idea that that was kind of her destiny, so to speak.
I mean, presumably, if she did time travel, Richard is the richest man on Earth right now, because she told him everything. She was like, you're going to have to invent this stuff and this stuff and invest in this.
Well, Richard was already a very successful person the present time.
That's true.
So I don't really know if he's, like, more rich or whatever.
Yeah, we don't get to find out.
Yeah, you don't see him at the end of the movie. But I do think, you know, he, like, Peggy Sue is going to leave, and he's like, yeah, you could change your future by marrying me instead of Charlie. And I was like, yeah, like,
do it. That would have been
like,
awesome.
Why not? That seems like way better because Charlie's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And Richard's kind of cool. I did think, Kevin J. O'Connor as Michael, was, like, the worst person in the world.
Yes. Yeah. But it was so funny though. It was, yeah, he was, like, their interactions were great.
Yeah, but, like, as soon as he showed up on screen, he was, like, debating his English teacher with about
Old Man in the Sea.
About Old Man in the Sea. And I just remember thinking, oh, God, you're that guy?
In the black turtleneck. I mean, he was, like, stereotypical beatnik character, but in the best kind of way.
But he was, like, every douchebag I ever knew in high school. Like.
Yep. My favorite line of his was, I think... when him and Peggy Sue drive out to, like, the farm or whatever was going on there, and they drive out of town on his motorcycle.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm checking out of this bourgeois hotel and I'm hitting the road. Like, yeah, that was amazing.
Yep.
So that's his whole character in a nutshell.
Yes. Yeah. yeah. And the other gang is fun. Again, Jim Carrey, I thought was great.
Yeah.
Like, he only has, like, some small stuff here and there, but he's very funny when he's in it. I loved his doo-wop group with Cage.
Yes.
When we started this podcast, I did not know that I would one day see Nicolas Cage and Jim Carrey in a doo-wop group.
Yeah,
but I'm happy.
In sparkly gold jackets. Yeah, in sparkly gold jackets.
In sparkling gold jackets. Yeah.
Who could say no to that?
Yes. And yeah, there's just funny lines throughout the movie, like. Cage is talking to Peggy Sue, and she's talking about Richard, about how good he is at physics, and Cage is like, who needs physics when we have chemistry?
Yeah, I forgot about that. there's some really cheesy one-liners and stuff, but it was good. It was good. When they're in the car, and Peggy Sue wants to have sex with him, and he's like, one week you say no, this week you say yes. That's a man's line, baby.
Yeah. All right. Well, since we're, like, sort of getting on the topic of Cage, why don't we go full in? Let's discuss Cage. What the hell is going on with his voice in this
movie? I have no idea why he talks like he doesn't, like...
He has... It's, like, this weird nasally tone.
Yeah. Like, like, really high-pitched also.
Like, really high-pitched. It sort of sounds like he's doing a Jerry Lewis impression.
Charlie, let's make love.
What? You mean sex? Intercourse. You want to have intercourse? Last weekend you said What time is it? Holy cow. Late.
A lot of things have happened since last weekend.
But you were the one who said we should wait, and you were right. We should wait till we get married.
Well, I know I must have believed that one, but when I said it, but doesn't Lucky Chucky want to come out?
Huh?
No. Your love machine. Your throbbing thrill hammer. Your thing.
You mean my wang?
He might be. I don't know.
It's really bizarre.
And it seems like he has, like, veneers on. Like, he has really bright, straight top teeth. And they're, like, in the way a lot of the time when he talks.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's odd. He gives an odd performance in this movie, which is not the first... I don't think it's the first time I've said this in this podcast. It definitely won't be the last time I say that in this podcast.
No, not at all. Definitely not. Make some bold choices. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what it is. And so, you know, while, like the thing about it is, like, Nicolas Cage is basically the male lead of this movie. He is the romantic interest for Peggy Sue. And I do not buy for a second that, like, every girl in that school will be attracted to him.
Yeah, no.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. For some reason, he's the top dog.
Yeah.
And I think because he says it, he's got the hair, the teeth, and the car.
Yeah.
And he's the lead singer.
Yeah, okay. But he's also got, like, a nasally voice and, like,
yeah, but he's also, like, the worst.
And, he's kind of a dick, like, throughout the movie.
Yeah, giant dick.
This movie opens with Nicolas Cage in the present day. Yep. I think I knew I would like this movie when this movie opened on a commercial with Nicolas Cage shouting and smashing fortune cookies.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. When that, my note for that is glimpse into Cage's insane future.
Yep.
Both in the movie and in real life.
Yes. Boom.
Now,
life imitates art.
Yeah. It's really odd the fact that his, I don't know why he decides to talk like that. And for, like, it was really bothering me. But then up until the point at the end after Peggy Sue is out with Michael and they see him singing in the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And then she's talking to him the morning after that. And he sounds, like, just so defeated and like, hurt because of this really weird nasally soft voice he has. That it was, like, kind of endearing in that one moment. And I was like, oh, poor... shitty Nick Cage. But I don't know, then after that it was annoying, and then we actually get to hear him talk in the present in the hospital room,
right?
And it's just the same voice, but now it's like this.
It was a lot closer to his real voice. But it was definitely weird. When he first shows up in high school time, Peggy Sue wakes up in the nurse's office. She's just giving blood.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage just comes in and does a vampire impression. So you're not even used to his weird voice yet. You don't even know that he has it.
Yeah.
And he just comes up and does this weird, like, vampire voice within the nasally voice.
Yeah, it's really odd.
And it's really weird. It's an odd role for Nick Cage, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that said... he doesn't do a bad job.
No, I think he's very good.
Just sounds weird.
He's really good. He's pretty funny in the movie, and he is pretty enjoyable. And he has like this endearing cluelessness.
Yeah,
about him, which I like. Like, I think he is in the present day bookend segments briefly. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, you don't really see him in the beginning other than that TV commercial. But it's established that he's. They're divorcing and they've had a tough time and he's been, like, sleeping with other women. But when he's, like, Cage in high school, you know, he's just this kid.
Yeah.
He's just this kid. He hasn't done those things yet. And so.
Right.
Like, he's kind of a dick because he's a teenager, but, like, you know, he's just a kid who hasn't done those horrible things. But Kathleen Turner knows that he did those things in the future. And so you have this really interesting relationship between the two. As Kathleen Turner ends up falling for high school age Nicolas Cage again.
Yeah, somehow, knowing that all the things that he does.
Yeah. But that's the thing, he hasn't done them yet.
He hasn't done them yet, that's a good point. You know, and that damn gold jacket.
Yeah, but she sees the guy who she fell in love with in the first place.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting. But at the same time, Cage does some weird stuff. Like, at some point, Peggy breaks up with him. Mm-hmm. Or no, this is actually before they break up. She goes out with Michael, and they, you know, do their little thing. And Cage sneaks into Peggy's room.
I have a note about this as well.
Which, in itself, is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Picks up a pillow and, like, thinks about suffocating her.
He, like, holds it to her face. And then she rolls over and he throws the pillow away.
Yeah.
And then they, like... Was he going to murder her?
Like, that was a really dark moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it.
Really weird.
And then they go in the basement and have this big argument about that fact that they broke up but didn't break up and, you know, teenager in love thing. And Kathleen Turner's trying to not say that I know that you're a cheating asshole in the future.
Yeah.
And there's a couple more, like, his voice cracks, like, really bad, and he has to stop and start the line over, and, like, all this stuff, and they just left it all in there.
Right.
It was really weird.
I had a miserable time tonight because of you. When the monotones did Book of Love, Chapter 4, you break up, won't you give it one more chance? I'm thinking, did we break up? Did we break up? Because if we did, I don't even know about it. Did that Maynard G. Beatnik give you what you wanted?
You know, I hate your sarcasm.
You're gonna blow it, Peggy Sue. No one treats Charlie Bodell like this.
Why do you have to talk about yourself in the third person like you were Napoleon? Why does everything have to be an argument with you?
Look, I've got the hair. I've got the teeth. I've got the eyes. Oh, Peggy, look outside that window. I've got the car. I'm the lead singer. I'm the man. Why are you arguing with me?
It's over, Charlie. I don't want to hurt you. I want you to be happy.
But no, I will be happy if I have you. I love you.
No, that doesn't make any difference. We just can't live together. And you went off with that bimbo, Janet.
What are you talking about? Who is Janet?
I just can't trust you.
But what about everything I said to you this afternoon?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like I have this window in my heart, and anytime you feel like it, you can just crawl right in. Well, I gotta close it, or nothing's ever gonna be different.
What has to be different?
Everything. You know it's not gonna work like this. You have to go to college and finish.
What about the group and my singing career? What about me?
I am trying to save you years of frustration of waiting for that big break. No, that big disappointment so you can blame me for the rest of your life.
You don't know Zip. You think I'm gonna spend the rest of my life selling appliances, chasing women around the store like my father? I've got to give it a shot. What the hell has changed, Peggy Sue? Until yesterday, you loved me, and you loved us. For 2 years, I've done nothing but love you. Fine, I'll prove it to you. I'll show you. I'm gonna be just like Fabian.
Yeah, I don't know. But I guess he was gonna murder her. But maybe that's a glimpse into his... his dark future. I don't know.
Yeah, it was that was definitely odd and very weird. And again, I think the movie goes off the rails at the end when you know, Peggy Sue is in like this time warp thing with her grandfather.
Yeah.
And yeah. Then all the lights go off and Nicolas Cage kidnaps her. I don't know how he knew that she was there.
Because movie.
Yeah. He kidnaps her, takes her to like some secluded garden area. Like a greenhouse or something, right?
Like yeah. It's like a greenhouse or something.
And then he gives her a pendant, and like she's like, oh, no. He gives her the pendant, and it has like the pictures of two babies, and she's like, these are our kids, how did you know? And she's like, what? No, that's me and you. Like, what?
Yeah. I did find that really funny. There's a couple moments like that where Peggy Sue will mention, like, Janet, or people from the future that, like, are involved in their relationship, and... Yeah. Nicolas Cage just progressively gets more and more confused. He's like, who is Janet? Yeah. I don't know any Janets. Yeah. And she's like, oh, it's, I can't, it's like Scott and Kelly or something are their kids. And she's like, who's that? What? These are us. Yeah, it is really funny.
Yeah, and Cage plays, like, clueless guy really well.
Yeah, he does.
Here's a great line where it's after the scene where Kathleen Turner tries to get Cage to sleep with her.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, refuses.
Right.
And that's a really funny scene anyway, because Cage's, like, weird orgasm face. But after that's over, he drops her off and he's trying to explain to her, like, yeah, you know, you said you wanted to wait and I want to wait too and all this thing. And she's like, yeah, but I'm a grown woman. I have, like, these experiences. And he's like, yeah, girls mature faster than guys.
I totally missed that. That's amazing. Classic time travel buffoonery. But yeah, it definitely gets out of control with the grandparents, who are like, "Oh yeah, you can just pick whatever memories you want," and they're like totally cool with how time travel works in this universe, I guess.
Yeah, I got the impression that they had maybe time traveled at some point.
Yeah, it definitely seemed that way. I mean, Grandpa said, "Oh, you know, the last time this happened was 600 years ago."
Yeah,
drive it. Like, what? Casual dropped that line in there.
Yeah, like I think that was, like, she was explaining her situation, and, like, he was, like, I was, like, writing something down on my notes, and then he said that, and I, like, did a double take. I was like, what?
Yeah. Really odd.
Like, I would love to see a spinoff about the grandparents, like, traveling to different time periods and, like, getting into crazy misadventures. And playing matchmaker, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah. But in the end, Peggy Sue gets with Cage. Their kids get born. After all, I guess that's the concern with Richard, is that... Because, yeah, if she married Richard, her kids would never be born.
Yeah.
That would kind of suck, although we only ever see one of her kids.
Yeah.
Apparently
all it takes to keep everything together is strudel. We find out from Grandma.
Yep. Yeah, it's... I mean, I did enjoy the movie throughout, but I think it does suffer from the mega happy ending that it goes for, when it could have gone for something a little more interesting. But, you know, in any case, I think that probably about wraps it up, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think I've said all I need to say.
Yeah, but, Peggy Sue Got Married, very enjoyable. How do you rank this among the Cage movies that we've seen so far, or the Francis Ford Coppola movies we've seen so far?
The Francis Ford Coppola movies are still, it's Rumblefish, Cotton Club, this.
Okay.
But I'd put this somewhere in the middle for the Cage movies. It's not great, not bad. It's funny.
You're right. It's No the Boy in Blue, which is obviously the best.
Nothing will ever top that. We didn't tie it into Best of Times, but we get to see Nicolas Cage sing in this, just like we did in that.
You're right. That's true.
There it is. Got to get it in once per episode.
We had singing Nicolas Cage in Best of Times and in Racing with the Moon. Right? He sings in that movie, too.
Yep.
And in this one. That's cool. There it is. Yeah, more movies these days should really capitalize on Nicolas Cage's singing talents, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that was a talent I didn't even know he had until we started this podcast.
Exactly. So, you know, the more you know. As for me, I think I would rank it, like, Rumblefish would be at the top, and then probably this, and then The Cotton Club. As for the Cage movies we've watched... I really liked Racing with the Moon, Rumblefish. I guess this would be somewhere in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. So far, I still think Rumblefish is number one for me.
Yeah, Rumblefish is pretty terrific. So, definitely, again, check out Rumblefish if you haven't checked out Rumblefish. But it's been
listen
fun.
To our episode.
Yeah, it's been fun going through this period of Francis Ford Coppola's career, I think. This is the end of the Coppola movies for a while. I don't think he has made a movie of Coppola since. Which is a shame.
Yeah, that sucks.
But, in any case, where can we find you online this week, Mike?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
And you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as all of my podcasts at filmblog.com, a podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham and Arrow. And you can find our other podcast, Film Bookcast, also at filmbook.com or on iTunes. So definitely check that out. Thank you for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. This is Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@film-book.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. We've used so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks, where we will be discussing Nicolas Cage in one of my favorite movies, Raising Arizona.
Wow. One of your favorite movies?
Well, I mean, it's up. Like, I love Raising Arizona. So.
Fair enough. All right.
I mean, favorite movies is a broad term. I have many favorite movies.
That's a good point. Very good point.
But I love Coen Brothers. I love Raising Arizona. I'm excited to talk about Nicolas Cage and Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then join us for the next film bookcast this coming week, where we're going to be discussing the new James Bond movie, Spectre.
It's going to be the best thing ever.
Yeah, hopefully.
I hope.
I mean, coming off of Skyfall, it's big shoes to fill, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I have high hopes.
Yeah.
Plus, I love Bond films no matter what, so.
You say that now.
I do say that now. That might be a gross over-exaggeration, but.
You know, I remember the dark days of Quantum of Solace, man. That was a rough movie.
The What's It of Boris?
The Ziggy of What's It?
Oh, man.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're referring to, Joe Cornish, director of Attack the Block, when Quantum of Solace came out, did this Quantum of Solace theme song. It's pretty amazing. Definitely check that out. It's more worth watching than Quantum of Solace is.
Yeah, basically.
All right, so yeah, we'll be reviewing Spectre next week and Raising Arizona for the complete works 2 weeks later. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We are out.
No, why are you?
Said that you would break my heart.